my note about Stacy?
I did. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. So we're going to have this meeting at 4. If Anna's planning to attend, I'm not seeing her yet.
I do not know whether she's going to attend. Yep, there she is.
There she is. Hi, Anna. How are you?
Hello, Anna.
Hi there. Hi, everybody.
All right, so it looks like we have a quorum. It is 1 o'clock or 1:01. Are we waiting for anyone else, Art, that you're aware of?
No, I think we're good, Mr. Chairman.
Should we call the meeting to order then?
Please do.
I guess I'll call the meeting to order right now at 1:01. First item on the agenda is the action item we've got for today. I see 4 trustees here, Anna, Angel, Bill, and myself. That's a quorum. I don't know if I need to do anything more with that right now, Art, other than move on to agenda item B.
That's correct, sir.
Agenda item B is the approval of the regular meeting minutes from February 12, 2024. What I'd love to do at this point is entertain a motion from one of the trustees to approve those minutes if there's no discussion.
So moved.
That was Bill Davis, so moving. And do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Anna. And a second in the motion. Any discussion? All right. All in favor, say aye. Oh, Art, aye. Am I supposed to do a roll call vote?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Bill Davis, how do you vote?
Aye.
Angel, how do you vote?
Aye.
And Anna, how do you vote?
Aye.
I also vote aye. So that makes it 4-0. We have approved the minutes, and that takes care of agenda item B. Agenda item C is the trust overview for quarter one from this year of the PARS 115 trust. I have Maureen Toll on the agenda, and she gets 30 minutes allotted at least.
Oh, you're giving me a lot of time here. Good afternoon, Maureen Toll from the PARS team, the trust administrator. And I just wanted to introduce someone new from our team that will be involved in supporting the City of Tucson relationship, and that's Carter Kimberly. And he can kind of wave. He's just joined us. He's been with PARS, but we've added him to our Arizona clients. And then Charlie Francis, who you know, who has 50 years as a finance director and has done work for Tucson that predates even working for PARS. So he's supporting the relationship as well. Carter, can you call up the report? Thank you. Good job so far. So this report's similar to what we've done in previous quarters, an update based on 331 account valuation for the trust. And I'm going to go to the next slide here. Just a reminder, PARS is the trust administrator. We now have 312 of these trusts, these Section 115 trusts, specifically for the same purpose that Tucson uses it for pension costs. So it's growing fairly rapidly, and then well over 500 Section 115 trust clients. And we do the record keeping, the compliance, state and federal. With U.S. Bank, we have an IRS private letter ruling. So we jointly administer this trust, but PARS serves as a liaison for U.S. Bank. So they're more in a back office role as needed, and so we coordinate with them as well. And you can see it, you're familiar with U.S. Bank, so I won't mention any more. Both have the role of making sure that the trust is administered in compliance with, the IRS private letter ruling, IRS rules, and such. And so it's exclusive benefit trust, as we've mentioned before, for the exclusive benefit of the employees, retirees, and beneficiaries. And so that's another fiduciary kind of oversight to make sure that, the city is not doing something that's not for the benefit and the purpose of the trust. And so if there are no questions on that, I know I've talked about that a bit, but I just want to give a little flavor for the what goes on with the administration of it. If you go to the next slide. This is just, we could probably skip this, but we put this in there. This is the actual actuarial that I think we came out in December, and I think we covered it in the last, so I'm not sure if we covered it in the last quarterly meeting that we did, but this shows the actuarial that PSPRS provided to you. You've got it directly, and so we put a slide in there for that if you needed as reference to discuss. So that was as of June 30th, 2023. And I don't, it takes them a little while, but they get it out in December of 2023. And, so if there's, we can always refer back to that as needed.
So,
Maureen, Keith has his hand.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. That's right. I, whenever I see these numbers, I always want to remind everyone, especially because we're in a public meeting, that this is only a portion of our trust that we still have, what, like $600 million in the trust that actually supplements this or isn't used in connection with this. So those funded ratio numbers are actually closer to 65 or 67% once you put the trust in there. Is that generally correct?
Yes, that's correct. And we put this in here because of the timeliness of it, but we probably won't put this in unless you want us to in, subsequent quarters until it's updated.
I like seeing it, but I also like seeing, or at least a notation that this, that our plan when taken with the 115 trust is significantly better funded than this 35 and 34% that it's showing on the screen. That's all.
You can modify that and send it to you to Art through Art, or we can do it for the next meeting.
Next meeting is fine with me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. And so the next slide. This is an overview of the trust activity since it was established. January 5th of 2021, it was funded March 3rd with your COPs, the bond obligations. So proceeds, $645 million. And since that time, additional contributions of just over $107 million have been made for total of $196.1 million, and we'll talk a little bit more in detail about it and what's happened this quarter, and expenses of almost $1.7 million. Total investment earnings are just about $50 million. So the account balance as of March 31st is $603.7 million, approximately. And I mentioned, of course, the investment strategy is being managed by PFM Asset Management. The plan administrator is the treasurer and pension administrator of that position. And so they're responsible for contributions, distributions, other types of administrative and logistical things related to the trust as approved by the City Council. Questions on this slide? Okay, so we'll move on to the next. We might want to enlarge this so I can see a little better. Thank you. Let's go down to 3/31/2024, the last quarter. You can see in the last quarter, no contributions were made. There was about $31.8 million in distributions. And investment earnings were close to that, about $34 million covered the distributions. And then the fees here for each of the providers assisting with administration and investment management of the trust. And so, and mentioned at the end of the quarter what the total amount was there. If you look With April, we're about to provide the April statement to you. We're just for April 30th, we're just a little late on that. But a $30.9 million contribution was made into the trust this last month. And then if you look at the contributions since the inception and initial funding of the trust, there was in the quarter ending 9/30/2022 contributions, 9/30/2023, and then that was the most significant contributions. And as we talked about in the last meeting, beginning with this fiscal year, as of July 1st, the total cost of funding for contributions, for employer contributions, were are running through the trust, and each payroll period there's a distribution out to PSPRS. So that is a change that has occurred as of the fiscal year 2023-24. And then disbursements, as you can see here, there were disbursements about in six quarters, and most of the disbursements, as I mentioned, based on taking bimonthly distributions, so it's increased as of 9/30/2023. You can see there. And then investment returns, I'll let PFM Asset Management talk a little bit more about that. But you can see there were five quarters of negative and eight quarters of positive returns overall. And you can see at the bottom there, it's almost about $50 million in investment earnings and such. And in total for expenses for the providers, it's during this time period, it was about almost $1.7 million, as described earlier. So do you have any other questions on all these numbers? We try to put it together one chart to simplify it, but there's a lot in here.
So this is Keith. Those distributions are going so at least for the three quarters of this fiscal year that are on this schedule. They're all entirely going to PSPRS biweekly.
That's correct.
And
that's correct. Art facilitates that, and then we direct for the funds to be sent by U.S. Bank to the PSPRS.
And is that covering the minimum recommended payment by PSPRS into the trust? Are we adding any supplementary payments onto that amount, or just the minimum that the state retirement system wants us to put in there?
Art can comment on that to confirm.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chairman, the biweekly amounts are the employer required contribution. Any over and above beyond the annual required contribution will probably be made at the end of June. So that's what we're waiting to do.
And has that amount been determined yet?
It's going to be in the neighborhood of 17-ish million.
Okay. And so no debt service payments on the certificates of participation that started this trust or coming out of the trust this year?
That's correct. I don't believe debt service is a permitted expense from the trust.
Great. Thank you for reminding me of that.
You are welcome.
Thank you.
That is correct. And Art, I haven't had a chance to ask you, but the contribution of $30.7 million, I think, in the last week, can you clarify what that's for?
Yeah, that is for the remaining three or four pay periods in the fiscal year to cover our annual required contribution. And the balance of that is what will be made to pay down our unfunded liability at the end of June.
Yeah, that's helpful to know. Thank you.
You are welcome.
Are there any other questions? So, all right. Well, I think if you go to the next slide is our contact information as needed. And we didn't take the whole 30 minutes. But we can fill that up next time if you'd like us to.
Thank you very much, Marina. I appreciate your talk. Keeping it brief and giving us all of the information we need. I appreciate that.
Very much.
Yeah. Did anybody have any extra questions or comments for this section of the agenda or for Maureen or our trust managers? Thank you. All right, we can move on, I guess, to agenda item D, the investment performance review as of 3/31/24, PFM Asset Management. Luke, please take it away. It looks like you've been allotted 45, but you can have extra if you'd like it.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will shoot to be 15 minutes short, just like Maureen did. Let's see here. And of course, we'll leave plenty of room for questions. Can you see my screen?
Yes.
Yes.
Great. Okay, so we'll start out with a financial markets and investment strategy review. And if you remember last quarter, we also reviewed the asset allocation study for this trust, as well as the investment policy statement, and essentially confirmed that the strategy that's in place is the strategy that this group would like to continue to see, at least at this time. And of course, we'll continue to evaluate that on an ongoing basis, at least every year, if not sooner, if markets change and we suggest a review of the investment policy statement or the asset allocation. So we start out showing returns overall. It's really been a strong start to the year in terms of equity market returns. You can see north of 10% returns for the S&P 500, 10.56%. You can also see that's fairly broad-based because the Russell 3000 has similar performance to the Russell 1000. So lots of consistency across companies. Earnings have been very strong to start the year in line with the growing economy. We'll cover some of the economic statistics. The economy is growing at a strong pace. If we think back to the beginning of 2023, most economists expected a recession, and we saw nothing but strong growth in 2023. We've seen a relatively strong start so far as well, albeit not as strong as 2023. International equities lagged significantly and have over the last year, 3 year and 5 year periods, as well as further out. So not seeing the improvement in international equity earnings that we're seeing domestically. Alternatives did not have a great quarter as well. So we're continuing to see markdowns in some of those alternative funds. Of course, the timing of those alternative funds are dependent upon valuations with asset classes that are illiquid relative to domestic equities that are priced every single day and traded every single day. So we're continuing to see some of those markdowns to start the year in 2024. Fixed income returns were close to zero across the board for the first quarter as markets priced in the fact that the Fed is less likely to cut rates anytime soon, and we'll delve more into that in the following slides. Overall, we're seeing, you know, close to zero returns over the quarter. However, we are positive over the last year, which is a good sign to see in fixed income markets. It's the first time we've seen positive 1 year returns in a few years after interest rates rose so sharply and resulted in some of the worst returns we've seen in fixed income securities in about 40 years. We're still seeing cash and cash equivalents have high rates of return in the 5 to 5.5% range on an annual basis. Still seeing some strong returns there. When we look at the economy, as we note, in the fourth quarter, U.S. GDP grew at an annualized rate of 3.4%, which was cooling down from the 4.9% growth rate in the previous quarter. First quarter of 2024 is at 1.6% to start the year, so a little bit of a slowdown from what we saw in 2023. Forecasts for most economists for the year of 2024 are in the 2% range still. So expecting growth, but not as strong a growth as we saw in 2023. The labor market is really one of the bright spots of our economy. We're seeing the unemployment rate below 4% consistently. One of the big surprises is the labor force participation rate. We look at the labor force participation rate relative to the Department of Labor projection of what's possible. And it's expected generally that the labor force participation rate will continue to decline over time due to demographic changes in the United States. But right now we're above the Congressional Budget Office forecast of that labor force participation rate. So we're seeing more people employed, very strong labor market overall. There are still quite a few more jobs available than people are unemployed. There's about 10 million jobs available and around 6 or 7 million people unemployed. So theoretically enough jobs for the unemployment rate to be at zero. However, we are seeing a mismatch still of the skills of some of those folks that are unemployed. So there's this persistent gap between those two measures, the number of unemployed people and the jobs that are available. So inflation, we noted here at the end of the quarter remains sticky. This was before we saw the most recent reading, which is not listed here, which really resulted in a shift to the Fed's policy. At the start of the year, the market was projecting 6 rate cuts in 2024, and that's based on where bonds are being priced out for the year and Fed funds futures contracts are being priced out for the year. So the market was expecting 6. The Fed was telling us that they expect 3 rate cuts in 2024. Well, what's changed is that in April, we received another reading on inflation, and inflation moved higher. Specifically, the Fed's looking at core personal consumption expenditures index, which moved up to 3.5%. Their target for that rate is 2%. And you can see we're on this nice trend lower in inflation for several months. Then we stabilized, and the Fed hoped and the market thought that inflation would continue to move toward this 2% target. Instead, it moved higher. So not only do we now have inflation that's not at the Fed's target, but we also no longer have a trend toward that 2% number. So as a result, we're seeing expectations of rate cuts much, much lower. The market's pricing in around 2 rate cuts for the year at this point in time. We haven't received the Fed's most recent dot plot, which will come out at their next meeting. But some of their commentary has suggested that they're expecting in the 1 to 2 range. PFM's view is that we'll probably see 1, and it would probably be at the very end of the year if we did see 1, just because it's going to take some time for the Fed to feel comfortable about a trend lower in inflation at this point in time. The Fed admits that they got it wrong with inflation when inflation was rising and they called it transitory. And it seems like they're less likely to try to make an inflation call at this point. They're rather going to wait, we think, for inflation to get to 2% or very close to 2% before they make any moves to Fed policy. So what we're watching, again, noted, I commented on the Fed already. It's likely that they're planning to keep rates steady for the time being. We're focused on, you know, the manufacturing conditions. They did improve during the quarter. That's potentially an indicator of growth to come. We're also seeing consumer sentiment and tracking that closely. Consumer sentiment has moved higher when we look at the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index. Why is this index important? It's because consumer spending makes up 2/3 of gross domestic product or our total economic growth. So how the consumer's feeling is important generally for expectations of growth going forward. We are seeing global central banks have interest rates at elevated levels. We're not alone in that, and they're generally holding them steady at those levels as well. So we'll cover more details of the returns. I covered the highlights. I'm not going to go through every sector. We'll touch on that with the city's portfolio. I did want to flip to our investment strategy overview. we are seeing, and I may flip back to one of those slides. We're in relatively neutral position across the board, you can see at this point in time, which is rare. Normally, we're taking some sort of a tactical move like we were last quarter. We were overweight with U.S. equities last quarter, which has performed well. We've now taken that to a neutral investment outlook for this quarter. Of course, we're evaluating this on an ongoing basis. But since we saw such strong returns to start the year at north of 10% in the S&P 500, we felt it was prudent to, you know, take some of that overweight off the table at this point in time. You can see that we're neutral, you know, across the board with the exception of credit sensitive sectors. We're still in the slightly positive on. We have a strong credit team that's looking at fixed income investments on a daily basis, not only for funds like this 115 trust, but for operating funds as well. And we're confident in the credit quality of most investment grade issuers at this point in time. We think there's still some value there. I will flip to just real quick. I think it's important to show the PE ratios. So PE ratios are a ratio of price to earnings, and it's a broad measure of how expensive stocks are being priced. So the numerator is the price of the stock. The denominator is the earnings of that company. And so it could be a value of how much growth is projected going forward. And the point I wanted to make is that we're near the averages overall. So although we've seen these very strong returns over the last couple of years, most of those returns are driven by earnings growth, not increases in market multiple, or in other words, expectations of growth going forward. So we are still near those averages where you can see we were at a much higher level in 2020, 2021 in terms of those PE ratios. And that can be an indicator of returns over the long term. That's something we're watching as well, I wanted to point out. So when we think about factors to consider over the next 6 to 12 months, I'm not going to cover all of these, but, you know, a couple are inflation. You know, inflation is continuing to be a theme, and it's changing on an ongoing basis. It's still continuing to moderate. Economic growth is strong. Consumer spending is strong. Labor market is strong, as I noted. Political risks are very high given the wars going on that we're seeing and the continued political divides we're seeing. Valuations are not as good as they were, as you saw that increase, that slight increase in PEs, but they're still in that average territory, so they're in the neutral. And again, corporate fundamentals are strong overall, so hence our overweight to some of those credit-sensitive sectors within the fixed income holdings. So happy to take any questions on the markets or the economy. If there are any, and if there aren't, I can move on to the plan performance summary. Great. So the quarterly return for the portfolio, 5.87%. So a strong quarter of returns to start the year, outperformed the benchmark by about 30 basis points this quarter. So continued outperformance of the managers and some of the asset class weightings that we had, like that overweight to domestic equities. You can see that overall the domestic equity managers slightly underperformed the benchmark, 9.65 versus 10.02, but that was more than made up by the other sectors. So international equities had very strong performance, and some of the international managers that underperformed in over the last three-year period have now outperformed in the short term, and we're optimistic that that outperformance will continue. The fixed income returns were negative in line with the market, as we saw, negative 0.13 for the portfolio, but negative 0.78 for the benchmark. So that overweight to some of those credit sectors really helped performance in the quarter, as credit spreads came in and the valuation of some of those corporate bonds improved. And then the cash equivalents performed in line with the market at 1.3%. I will point out the since inception number, 3.11 now, so well in the green. And I will note above the debt issuance rate of 2.7%. So one way to think about this is that you're in a net benefit situation as a result of issuing the bonds at this point in time. We knew that it may take some time. We started out, as Maureen noted, with some negative quarters of performance as the market trended lower right at the inception of this portfolio. But the strong growth we've seen since has outpaced that, and we're in the green at this point in time. I did want to show, because I know there are always questions relative to PSPRS performance. We don't have the quarterly performance of PSPRS through March at this point in time. It wasn't published, as far as we were aware, when we were putting the report together. But we do have that performance through December 31st. So I wanted to show our performance as of December 31st, and then I can flip to show the PSPRS performance as of December 31st as well. You can see over the last year through December 31st, 2023, the performance of the portfolio was 16.19%. That excludes the most recent quarter I just showed you, so 16.19 for the 115 trust. Then we flip to the PSPRS returns through December 31st, 2023. They came in at 11.3%, so about 5 percentage points lower than the 115 trust for the year ended December 31, 2023. And I think what's more interesting to note is the underperformance of the PSPRS portfolio relative to the benchmark. It's really unusual to see performance that is this much different than the benchmark, and I think indicates that, you know, the benchmark for the PSPRS portfolio may not be an appropriate benchmark. If you look at CFA guidelines for the CFA Institute, comes up with best practices for benchmarking, and when you see a difference in return to this magnitude of 8% between the portfolio and the benchmark, it points to something, to the effect that the benchmark is probably not the right benchmark that they're managing the portfolio against. I think some of this is some of the lagging alternatives that they're investing in. I would think some of that should be captured in the benchmark as well. But again, there's just not a lot of information on what the holdings of the portfolio of PSPRS are or what's in the benchmark. And I see a couple of hands are raised based on those comments. So happy to take questions if there are any on those.
Keith, go ahead.
I was going to say, Bill, go ahead, but thank you. Luke, so we don't know then if they did anything to change their benchmarking, because if we look past history, they were performing relatively consistent with their benchmark, a little under, a little under, a little over, and then way under, right? So did they change something in their benchmarking that we're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of. I did not see anything to that effect on the website or any of the information that I received. Art or the team from Tucson, I don't know if you received any updates on that.
No, I mean, any change in the benchmark, they wouldn't necessarily have to be communicated to my office, but I haven't seen anything, you know, that would reflect that.
And our plan doesn't have three-year numbers, so the only comparable number on here is that one-year column. Is that correct? Luke, also?
That's correct through December 31st. We now have a three-year number through March, but we didn't have one through December 31st because the timing didn't match up.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, Luke, yes. My question. You know, the last, I think, meeting or two, you've mentioned, you know, because of the alternative investments at PSPRS, there were some lagging valuations. Do you think that's playing into some of their annual returns?
I do think so. And Bill, as you point out, that's something that we've all discussed as a group. I know you shared some thoughts around that and expectations of that hitting this portfolio at some point as well. And yes, we think that's likely a big part of it. With north of 40% of the PSPRS portfolio invested in alternatives, real estate holdings as well, have not performed well over the last 12 months. And to your point, those valuations lag the dynamic market of domestic stocks and a lot of the more marketable securities that are in the 115 trust portfolio. So I think, you know, this difference in return over this last year really shows the benefits of holding a 115 trust. And as Parv's mentioned, we're seeing more and more municipalities show interest in creating these 115 trusts. I think Maureen mentioned 312 at this point in time that they work with alone. Not only is there flexibility of how to handle the contributions and their impact on the budget, there's also diversification. So when we look at return differences to this magnitude between the two different portfolios, what we get by combining different portfolios with different asset allocations is theoretically over time a higher risk adjusted return. So for each unit of risk you're taking, you're getting a higher return by investing in a mix of the 115 trust and PSPRS rather than all in one or all in the other, and a smoothing of those returns over time, which ultimately protects these funds for the important purpose that they're designated for. So we have lots of other slides with some of the accounting numbers and details. I think Parr showed the highlights of that as well. Happy to.
I had one more question.
Yes, please. Yep. Sorry, I missed your hand raise on that one.
No, I'm not sure I had it up. Slide 2.1, you went out of your way to talk about the 3.1 total fund performance since inception.
Yes.
And that was above the COPS interest rate we were paying, and so we're in a net positive position. I want to make sure I understand that totally. Is that weighted in a way that accounts for the early losses we had in those bad periods? So we're actually in a better position overall, considering all the elements? Or is that just on the lesser amount we've had since we lost the money, we're actually making more on that lesser amount? Or have we made enough to get back to where we would have been had we not lost any money to begin with? Does that make sense what I'm asking?
Mr. Chair, yes, that does make sense what you're asking, and it's a good question. The answer is that I can get back to you with the exact figures because you're right. Okay. There's a difference when we look at the debt issuance cost of $645 versus the return on an amount that's slightly lower given the fact that the city has taken out some of those funds over time and the fact that the market declined over time as well. But the more important fact is the distributions and those distribution contribution rates over time. I would say the number's going to be fairly close to that difference of around 40 basis points where it holds today. But I can't put that exact number together for you for the next meeting as well to show. And I can work with the team at the city to pull and see, you know, those actual dollar value figures that we show here. And how they line up to the actual debt issuance cost. It's going to come out close, but, you know, if you look at the weighted average market value of the 115 trust, it's been a little bit lower than the weighted average market value of that debt cost over time. However, there has been some pay down of that debt as well, which would factor into that calculation. So yes, I can get those exact figures to you. The easy way to look at it is that 3-year or since inception return, and that's going to get you close, but I can provide the actual number for the next meeting also. I think that's an important point you make.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you. I love seeing that number. I'm glad where we're at and what you're doing for us. I just wanted to make sure I knew exactly what it meant, or at least close to exactly what it meant. Thank you.
Thank you. Angel, I see your hand is raised also.
I have a question. How would you balance out that return given the fact that we transfer monies into the trust?
So that part is handled in our disbursements and contributions. So we take a market value average based on daily market value to calculate those returns over time. We use a performance methodology that's in line with best practices, whether that's accounting best practices or financial best practices like the CFA Institute. So we're weighting those contributions and distributions over time, and we're calculating those returns in line with best practices. So we could see the details of that when we look at it, but since there are some large inflows and outflows, I'm trying to see the I think it was early, potentially earlier. Let's see. Yeah, so those net flows do change from time to time. So we wait for those is the answer. We wait the returns based on those, but I can provide more details on that once we pull up the exact figures that the chairman asked for as well.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, I think I came in under 15 minutes, or more than 15 minutes under my time frame. So happy to answer any other questions if there are any. But if not,
Luke, I've got another one if you've got a minute.
Please.
It seems like we've got a minute.
I can reshare if I need to. Yep.
We looked at our investment strategy at the last meeting, if I'm remembering correctly. And I asked you to confirm that you thought that was appropriate for what the goals were for the trust. When the cash plan for the trust or the disbursement plan for the trust was to treat it more like an annuity, where we were over the next 25 years earning money on our balance, but we were drawing that balance down in a slow and kind of managed way. So at the end of 25 years, the trust was empty and done, and we'd built up our amount in PSPRS, so we're well funded and trying to keep our pensions costs down the whole time. We got a presentation then also at the last meeting where perhaps the city was considering a different option where it wasn't being treated like an annuity and getting spent down, where we were only spending what we were earning and having the entire $600 million left at the end of 25 years. If that's the spending plan, or considering the difference between those two spending plans, would you want to reconsider our investment options if we had a different cash plan like that? Is that a big enough change to warrant some extra looking at our strategy?
Yes,
does that also make sense what I'm asking?
I'm following that question as well. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would say that yes, the answer to your question is yes. The time horizon of this portfolio would impact our investment strategy recommendation.
Right.
I would add that if we knew the time frame was 25 years, we would likely shift the allocation slightly. It's up to the city in terms of their decision on when to move these funds, and we don't have an exact date at this point in time. So with regard to the cash disbursements, I'll pass that off to the city. I don't know if anyone wants to comment on that.
I guess I can provide some information on that. I mean, that is an issue that Mayor and Council are very aware of, and was the subject of some of the conversation that happened with the executive director from PSPRS when they visited last fall. The mayor and council are on record saying, you know, they want to take some more time to consider, you know, when and how quickly, the funds are transferred to PSPRS. And they also want to do that with the information of, you know, what do PSPRS returns look like versus what are our 115 returns looking like? They have asked us to, schedule another similar conversation, a check-in with PSPRS late summer, early fall, and we're working on doing that. I'm in contact with the executive director, and we're looking at an August or September meeting between PSPRS officials and the city council again. So we're continuing to, you know, pay our required contributions and monitor the investment portfolios and returns for both systems, you know, because we've got as much invested in PSPRS as we do in our 115 as far as assets go, and you know, continue to develop a strategy. But Marion Council didn't want to make that. When they decided not to immediately transfer the money to PSPRS upon issuance of the bonds, when they decided to establish the 115 trust, that they were doing that deliberately to take some time.
So I guess if our job as trustees is to kind of oversee the effective management of these investments with all of the great help that we get doing that, if we're having a, I guess, we have a future agenda item list coming up. I'm probably going to put a cash analysis or a fund analysis, incomes and spending analysis back on that. I would like to see that so we have an idea what's happening and what the plan is for the future. That will help Luke and others and us oversee the investment of the funds and make sure we're investing correctly for what the plan is. It'd be, I would love to see that soon relatively soon for us to be able to know that we're doing our job like we're supposed to, if that makes sense also. Okay. Is there anything else for Luke or the investment performance review, PFM Asset Management?
Thank you all. Nice to see all of you.
Nice to see you, Luke. Thank you very much for your information. We're going to move on to agenda item E, call to the audience. So at this time, the community may address the board with their concerns. The board, we may not address the specific concern at this meeting. However, we may, at our discretion, make it a future agenda item where there can be discussion. Community members are asked to address the board, not a specific member. Each person is going to be limited to 3 minutes. Are there any members of the community that would like to address the board at this time during call to the audience at this meeting? I am not seeing any community members wishing to address the board at this time, so we're going to move on to future agenda items. I think I got a little ahead of myself. I just mentioned that last time. I would love to see an updated cash flow presentation relating to the PARS 115 trust and the city's plan for its spending, because that will greatly help us oversee the investment of the funds, which is one of our prime jobs, and that's easier when we know how and when the timing of the spending is going to happen. So I'm suggesting that for a future agenda item again, please. Do we have any other? I'm sorry.
I've noted that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And now I got my stuff all messed up. Any other suggestions for future agenda items for the trust fund board? I had a wonderful meeting. I don't, Art, again, sorry, I'm on several boards. Do I need a motion to adjourn this meeting?
Yes, sir.
I would love to entertain a motion to adjourn this meeting.
So moved.
That was Bill Davis, so moving to adjourn. Do we have a second for adjournment?
Second.
Any discussion about adjournment? Bill, how do you vote for adjournment?
Aye.
Angel?
Aye.
Anna?
Aye.
I'm also in favor of adjourning at this point, even though I enjoyed the meeting and had fun and got a ton of valuable information. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you all in a few months.
Great job, everybody. Thanks.
Bye, everyone. Bye-bye.